בכלל לא קדור בשעה.
Tonight I wanted to discuss various aspects of the melacha of bishul and afiyah, cooking and baking, on Shabbos. And that stems from the very source of the melachos of Shabbos themselves. We discussed earlier the sugyan Shabbos and daf mem tes amud beis, which tells us that you don't require psukim in order to teach us the lametes melachos. And in fact, if there is a pasuk that underscores a forbidden melacha, that always is a challenge. Tosfos is bothered in Shabbos and daf beis. Why do we have even two psukim when it comes to the melacha of hotzah? And the Ri maintains that somehow that indicates that there must be something unique about hotzah. Hotzah is being a melacha gerua, in a certain sense a deficient melacha, and that's why a pasuk is necessary. The same thing is true when it comes to los savaroesh, igniting a flame on Shabbos. The Torah tells us that is asr, los savaroesh b'chomos v'seichan d'yom ha-shabbos. And the Gemara debates in Shabbos and Daf Ayin, why is it necessary to have a pasuk? What is wrong with the general rule? And that rule, of course, is the following, based on Mishkan. We know that Mishkan serves as the basis of Lamed Tes Melachos. The Gemara tells us the following, that regarding Melachos HaMishkan, that Heim Zoru was necessary to plant, to seed, Atem Lo Sizru, and therefore you are not allowed to do so on Shabbos. Heim Kotzru, they would harvest, Va'atem lo sikseru. If you look in that Gemara Shabbos Mentes, you find a very fundamental machlokes between Rashi and Rav Haigon, and that is what exactly is the drasha of Mishkan that serves as the basis of Lamed Tes Melachos. Whenever the Gemara links Melachos Shabbos to Mishkan, Rashi always shows us its place in terms of Binyan HaMishkan. Binyan HaMishkan. In other words, that Kadosh Baruch Hu told us, construct a Mishkan, build a Beis HaMikdash, but do not do so on Shabbos. And therefore, anything that generally is involved in building the Mishkan, that serves as a basis of Melachos Shabbos. So if I mention a particular Malacha, you'll have to show me where that Malacha is found when it comes to the very construction of the Mishkan itself. And Rav Haigon is of the opinion that no, one can glean from Avodah Sakarbanos. Certain Avodah is permitted on Shabbos, but other avoda is forbidden. If I decide to offer a carbon nedava, I cannot offer that on Shabbos. And therefore, any of the malachos that are involved in avodas hamishkan, that serves as a basis of the lamed tes malachos. Rashi even cites, later on Shabbos, and that's the Beis Amud Aleph, this view of Rav Haigon that one could glean from avodas hakarbanos. So Rashi always mentions a particular malach in terms of binyan hamishkan, and Rav Haigon is allowed simply to derive from avodas hakarbanos themselves. Vegleital, in his introduction to his discussion of the first of Melachos Shabbos, writes that this is quite a fundamental machlokes. Mishkan serving as the basis of Melachos Shabbos, is it binyan hamishkan, or is it avodas hakarbanos? When the Gemara uses the following phrase, that Heim Zoru, it was necessary for them to plant, and therefore Atem Lo Sizru, what exactly does that mean? Rav Haigon interprets simply as follows. If you want to, for example, offer a mincha, it's necessary to have grain. How do you access this grain? You have to cultivate it, you have to plant it, you have to harvest. All the malachos that are involved in the process of creating a mincha, all of that serves as the basis of Lamed Tes Melachos. Lechem Hapanim is part of the Avoda. Any of the Melachos necessary for Lechem Hapanim, the Afia, the Lisha, the Charisha, the Zriya, all of it is considered to be a basis of Lamed Tes Melachos. And when you look in Rashi, and that's Sugya Shabbos Mentes Medeis as well as Andaf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, Rashi always links it to Binyan HaMishkan. Where did you find all these Melachos? The first 11 Melachos that we term Sidur Depas, Rashi writes that was in the process of Bishul Samemanim. It was necessary to extract dyes, and therefore they were extracted from plants, and therefore any malacha that's necessary to plant and to reap and to harvest for construction of the Mishkan, that serves as a basis of Lamed Tes Melachos. See, when the Gemara mentions that Heim Zoru, they seeded, they planted, who are they? Who are they? According to Rav Haigon, it means Bnei Yisrael, when they were doing the avoda. They knew that avoda had to be done, so they would plant now in order to be able to do avoda later. They would reap now in order to do avoda. If it's binyan hamishkan, it's not really that Bnei Yisrael planted for the purpose of binyan hamishkan. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that, you know, build the mishkan, and you need crushing, and you need atzei shittim, Bnei Yisrael didn't start planting trees years late in order to build, right, a mishkan, but rather this was already done years ago. The midrashim that Bnei Yisrael already from Avos had trees that were taken out of Mitzrayim with them for the purpose of Bnei HaMishkan. Haim did not mean Bnei Yisrael after the tzivui of Osle Mikdash v'shachanti b'sofam. Haim means this very simply. In order to be able to utilize trees, they required, it required years ago, planting and harvesting, and therefore that serves as the basis of Lamitas Melachos. It's a fascinating machlokes, whether it's Binyan HaMishkan or Avodas HaKarbanos, you don't find necessarily, right, explicit distinctions between these two views. But the Gleitel suggests a couple of possibilities. The Gemara tells us clearly that squeezing grapes in order to extract wine, squeezing an aleph in order to extract shemen oil, that is forbidden min HaTorah. On Shabbos, I'll ask you the following, is that an Av Malacha? Or is that only a tolda? In order to be an av malach, it has to be rooted in mishkan. The Gemara writes in Bava Kama Daf Beis and Shabbos Naf Tzarivav, Hach Tahavi b'mishkan chashiva karaliyav. If it's found in the mishkan, it's an av. If it resembles that which is found in the mishkan, then it is only considered to be a tolda. And we discuss several differences between avos and toldos. Squeezing grapes, squeezing olives, was that found in the Mishkan, or was it not? Well, was it found in Binyan HaMishkan? No. You didn't have to squeeze olives and grapes for Binyan HaMishkan. Is it found in Avoda? Absolutely. It's essential to have Yayin and Shemen for the purpose of Avoda, and therefore production of wine and oil, that was found in the Mishkan. And therefore, according to Rav Haigon, that is an Av, that is not considered simply to be a Tolda. There is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Gaonim, something which is termed molalin melilos. If you will rub the pods, the ears of grain, in order to refine the grain, is that a malacha? Is that forbidden in HaTorah? Or is that only midrabanan? You don't find molalin melilos in Binyan HaMishkan, but you do find that in preparation of the Minchas HaOmer, they would refine that which they would use for the Mincha, and part of that was that process of molin melilos. So the Gaonim assume that was found in the Mishkan, that is forbidden in HaTorah. And the Rambam writes that this is only considered to be an Isser derabanan. So there are differences as to whether the source is building Mishkan or whether it's considered to be avodas hakarbanos. What about afia? Because it's interesting that when the Mishnah lists and daf ayin gimla min aleph, the lametes melachos, one of them is ofeh, one of them is baking. And both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are troubled. Why is it that afia is mentioned, baking, as opposed to bishul, cooking in the most general sense? The Gemara answers, because simply, when you look at the first 11 malachos in the Mishnah, that is sidura de pas. So therefore, right, Rebbe mentioned the first 11 malachos that we would recall in terms of the baking process. And therefore, that reflects the sequence of the opening malachos in the Mishkan, afia. But is afia an av? Or is afia only considered to be a tolda? Was baking found in the Mishkan? It's interesting, if you look in the Yerushalmi is explicit that it is a tolda. Because when the Gemara asks, why is it that Rebbe chose the term ofeh, baking, as opposed to bishul, the Yerushalmi adds that phrase. Why is it that the Mishnah mentions afia, which is only a tolda, and doesn't mention the av malacha of mevashel? Was afia found in the Mishkan? Well, that should depend. If you assume that karbanos, well, of course, afia was found in karbanos. If they would bake the lechem hapanim, the shtei halechem, of course, afia is necessary to have avoda. But you don't find afia in the process of building the Mishkan. There you have bishul, you do not have afia. Whether baking is an av or a tolda could depend on this issue in the following sense. If you can glean from avoda, certainly ofa was included in avoda. If you have to limit yourself to binin hamishkan, so then bishul yes. What about afia? Maybe yes, maybe no. See, it wasn't found in binin hamishkan. That's clear. That's why the Rishami labels this only as a tolda. However, maybe one could argue as follows. The Rambam writes that even when it comes to an av malacha, sometimes you have a right to broaden out. Not only broaden out in terms of a tolda, but sometimes you can even broaden out an av. Let's assume, for example, zoreya, planting. That's considered to be an av. And watering a plant, which is highly different, but it's done for the same purpose of promotion of growth, gidul hapri. In such a case, that's only a tolda. But what about the following? Markiv, mavrich, cross-planting, grafting. Is that an av, or is that considered to be a tolda? So the Meiri writes that mavrich and markiv, that's only a tolda. But the Rambam writes that's an av. Does that mean it was found in the Mishkan? For the Mishkan, they used to graft and cross-plant? No, not necessarily. The Rambam writes that cross-planting and grafting is sufficiently similar to Zoreya and Oteya, that is all considered to be what the Rambam terms Me'ein Malacha Achas. So the Rambam does have this fascinating comment that sometimes you can have something that was not directly found in the Mishkan, but it is an expansion of that which is found, and therefore it's considered to be an Av. And this is what the Rambam writes about Afia. Afia was not found in the Mishkan, because the Rambam assumes, as Rashi, that the source has to be rooted in building the Mishkan, and you did not have to bake in order to build a Mishkan. You did have to cook in order to extract dyes, but you didn't bake. But nonetheless, the Rambam writes, I will still tell you that Ofe is an Av Malacha, because after all, it is simply part of the broader category of cooking. If I will tell someone, don't cook on Shabbos, I don't mean that don't cook, but yes, you can bake. Cooking can be a more generic, broader term. The Rambam writes, Lahalacha, that is considered to be an Av. So it's an interesting view of the Rambam. On the one hand, we glean from building, Binyan HaMishkan, but Oph is considered to be an Av. Yerushalmi, Oph is a Toldo. And the other possibility is that Oph should be an Av simply because of Haigon. But that's found in the process of Avodah.
Was the Lechem HaChayim considered
an Avodah per se? It wasn't Binyan, but we do consider that to be that which is necessary for the daily routine, right, of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. So that, the Rebbe of Haigon terms, like part of Avodas HaKarbanos. When we mean Binyan HaMishkan, we certainly mean construction of the physical structure of the Mishkan, and perhaps as well even making the Klei HaMikdash as well, that aspect of the Kelim. What the function of the Kelim are, right, we use the Shulchan for Lechem HaPanim, so that is considered to be part of Avodas HaKarbanos. So it's a fascinating focus. What really is the basis of Malach HaShabbos, Binyan HaMishkan, or does it extend to the case of Avodas HaKarbanos as well, and perhaps a difference as to what extent Oph is considered to be an Avra Tolda. See, if you assume it's a Tolda, it is somewhat striking that Mishnah, in Shabbos Daf Ein Gimel, when it lists Avos Malachos, it includes Oph, which is only a Tolda, that is not the real Av Malach itself. And the Rambam writes, it's an Av, the language of Yerushalmi is considered to be a Tolda. In terms of the very essence, the definition of the Malacha of Bishul, so here Rashi writes the following chiddush. See, the Gemara in Shabbos, and Daf Ayin Dalet, has the following case. A person who is shoda sichta la'atuna. A person takes a wooden peg, and he places it in the oven. And what is the purpose of doing so? The Gemara says, in order to harden it. You'll put something in the oven, in the kiln, in order to harden it. The Gemara says that in that case, he's chayiv mishum Mivashel. Why is that considered to be part of Bishul? The Gemara says that Mahu Desema, what would you have thought? That the person's mindset simply is to harden, and therefore he should not be chayiv. The Gemara says, Kamash Malan, that no, Mirpa Rafi Vahodar Kamit. That's the language of the Gemara. The process of hardening is a gradual one. When you take something in the oven and you place it in first, in such a case, it softens. And then when you leave it in the oven, further application of heat, then ultimately it becomes hard. But there is a stage where it is softened, and the Gemara says, Yer chayiv mishum mivasha. Why exactly is that true? So Rashi writes the following chiddush. The definition of bishul, at least when it comes to utensils, Rashi writes is the following. The use, the application of heat for the purpose of softening. That's what Rashi writes. So therefore, when you go ahead and take this peg and you put it into the oven, why is it that you are chayiv? Rashi says, because that intermediate stage of softening is considered to be the act of mevashel. So when the Gemara says, mirpa rafi vahadar kamif, according to Rashi's view, mirpa rafi is considered to be the act of bishul. When you take, for example, clay and you'll put it in the oven, the first effect that the heat will have is to soften the clay, and then over time, gradually, it's hardened in the kiln, then it emerges as something which is hard. According to Rashi's view, the act of bishul is the softening process. That's what Rashi writes in Shabbos and Daf, Ayin Dalid, Amud Beis. I would tell you that Rashi, right, implies several chiddushim. Chiddush number one is the following, the definition of bishul, and that is application of heat in order to soften. Chiddush number one. Chiddush number two, I will tell you this, the softening process. That intermediate stage, at best, is a temporary condition. It softened. I imagine so, that when you put something in the oven, right, it will go through the process of becoming soft before ultimately it is hardened. You'll go ahead and put a food type, for example, in the oven. Sometimes it is softened, and then when you overcook it, all of a sudden it will become quite hard. But that is the act of bishul. That certainly is a temporary process. But nonetheless, Rashi writes, what is considered to be chayiv. You know, there are many malachos that we assume you're only chayiv on Shabbos if it is something which is a malacha hamiskayemis. It has to be something which is lasting. It has to be something which is enduring. Now the Mishnah tells us in Perek Habona, ha'osa malacha, umalachta miskayemis b'Shabbos. When are you considered to be chayiv if a person performs a malacha and the malacha is enduring, the malacha is lasting? It's a little bit unclear how to read that line of the Mishnah. Ha'osa malacha, umalachta miskayemis b'Shabbos. That last word, b'Shabbos, is dangling. It's hanging a little bit. Now, Rashi writes, the Mishnah should be read as follows. Ha'osa malacha b'Shabbos. In other words, that last word in the phrase is talking about when the malacha is done. U'malacha miskayemes. What is the definition of kayemes? We really don't know. If you read the Mishnah differently, no, then the Mishnah is defining kayam as well. Ha'osa malacha kama, and malacha miskayemes b'Shabbos. And the malacha endures for the duration of Shabbos. Not a person who performs the malacha on Shabbos, because that's a very significant issue in terms of many malachos of Shabbos. How long does the malacha have to last in order to call it a malacha ha-miskayemes? To be chayiv min ha-Torah for bona, you need a binyan kavua, not a binyan arai. It can't be makeshift. It has to be something which has a certain sense of permanence. How is it that you define permanence? The Pinagadim writes a fascinating case that, you know, in his community, they only had one sukkah. And the first night of Sukkot, it happened to be Shabbos. Right? The Prima Gadam, he was in Shul. A gust of wind blew the Sukkah apart. They had no Sukkah, right, in the seat of the Prima Gadam. And the Balabatim approached him, can they have a guy, right, construct the Sukkah? Because if you have a Shvus, the Shvus, the Makom Mitzvah, that certainly is Mutter. Amir Lenachri, having the guy do so, is only Nisud Rabbanan. But making a temporary dwelling, a diras arai, a sukkah. In Hilchos sukkah terms, it's a diras arai. In Hilchos Shabbos terms, is that called a diras arai? Now, how long does something have to last in order to be called something which is kavua? The Prima Gadim writes in the Tshuvas that he was debating the issue, and the Baal Batim came in and said, don't worry, we solved the problem, the goy put everything back together while he was assessing whether it's mutter, whether it's usher. You know, the Baal Eitzah writes that for Tzorech Rabbim, a guy can even perform malachos min ha-Torah. But we try, if possible, to lower it to at least a shvus b'shvus, the Bakal Mitzvah. But it's a fascinating issue. A sukkah is a diras arai, but is that true in Hilchos Shabbos terms? When a person writes, you're only chayiv if the ksiva is shel kayama. How long does that have to last in order to be, right, an enduring form of writing. That's what Rosh Shlomo Zalman discusses. You know, it's common. Yeah, but sometimes here, in Eretz Yisrael, it was more common that the doctors would use pens if they had to write, and they were allowed to violate Yisurid Rabbanan and Shabbos, Letzarechola, they would write with pens that were made with invisible ink, meaning that the impression would last for a window of time, and then it would disappear, with the hope that the doctor could write his notes, and immediately as soon as Shabbos was over, he would Xerox all of his notes, and then, you know, you'll look Sunday morning, the piece of paper is considered to be blank. That's what Shlomo Zalman discusses, right, how long does the impression have to last in order to be a ksiva shel kayama, or a kesher, when one ties a knot. How long does a kesher have to last in order to be a kesher shel kayama? The Ramaz Machmer in Shin Yud Zayin, right, that not to allow even a bow, right, to last for the entire duration of Shabbos. So if you tie a bow, a single bow in your shoes, and then later on in the day you take them off, that's fine. But if you have like a dockside, right, where you'll tie the bow, and once the bow is in, it's meant to last, in such a case, the Rama writes not to make that type of knot, even if inherently it's not a kesher shel kayama, but the intent was it's something that should last. 2 years ago, this was always an issue with galila, for example. Now we have the Velcros, we have the clasps, but they used to just simply, right, use the sashes, the straps, in order to do galila. So a person was given a galila, who would make a bow, and when are they going to lane from the Sefer Torah next? If they're going to use it at mincha, so that certainly is not a kesher shel kayama, but if they're not going to use it at mincha, or you were given galila at mincha, they're not going to use it until, right, maybe next Shabbos, or the earliest Monday, in such a case. That's an interesting chumra based on the Ramah, that only to weave it in and out, as opposed to even making a bow. It's unclear how long a malacha has to last in order to label it as shel kayama. Here, a chiddush, according to Rashi, that intermediate stage of bishul, that if I were to be able to look into that oven, I'm going to see that the substance, the peg that I put in the oven, briefly is softened before it is hardened, for that one is chayiv mishum mevasha. That is the view of Rashi. So chiddush number one is the definition of bishul, the application of heat for the purpose of softening. And chiddush number two is even though it's only a temporary state for mevashel, one is considered to be chayiv. And I would suggest chiddush number three is the following. If you were to ask the person, what are you doing? The person would respond and say, I am hardening. Why are you putting this in the oven? To make it hard. So you'll say to the person, yeah, but you know, you realize that there is going to be a window of time that it's softened. It's a chiddush that is considered to be the malacha. His mindset, his intent certainly is to harden and not to soften at all. In fact, if you look in the Rambam disagrees. In Perek Tesef of the Shabbos, the Rambam writes the following, that the definition of bishul is the use, the application of heat in order to change its state, either to harden that which is soft or to soften that which is hard. Either one is considered to be an act of mevashel. The Lechem Mishnah points out as follows, that the Rambam understood that Gemara very simply, and that is that you're placing it in the oven in order to harden. The use of heat to harden a substance, that is considered to be the malacha of mevashel. Not as Rashi assumes that you're chayav for the intermediate view. But the Lechem Mishnah points out, it doesn't seem to fit the language of the Gemara so well, because the Gemara says that, no, maybe the person is potter. The person is potter because l'shri manakam lechav, and he only intended to harden. The Gemara says, no, k'mashim lan, he's chayav, because mir parafe, it softens first, v'hadar kamit, and ultimately it hardens. That's what caused Rashi to define bishul in terms of softening. The Gemara says, maybe you should be potter, because all you're doing is hardening. Kamash malam, that no, it goes from soft and then to hard. No, why is that true according to the Rambam? The definition of bishul is hardening. Lechem Mishnah writes the following, wait. When do we assume that application of heat to harden is considered to be a malacha? That's if you're dealing with a malleable or a soft substance. But if you begin with something which is hard, and you end up with something which is hard, that is not called bishul. That is an insufficient change in state in order to be chayiv bin hatorah for bishul. So that's what the Gemara suggests. When I take a peg, and I put it in the oven, it's true that it's forged, it's hardened, when it sits in the oven for a lengthy period of time. But it began as a hard peg. It ended up as a harder peg. Is that incremental difference considered to be sufficient to call it bishul? That's what the Gemara says. No, mir tarafi v'hadar kami. It didn't happen so seamlessly. There was an intermediate stage that it was soft. And the bishul is going from the soft to the hard. No, the Gemara says the following. Mir parafi v'hadar kami. It softens and hardens. So if I were to ask Rashi and the Rambam, where is the bishul? Rashi would say the bishul is mir parafi. And the Rambam would say, no, the bishul is right, v'hadar kamit, when it becomes hard. An interesting way of reading the simple phrase of the Gemara. It becomes soft and then hard. Rashi writes, the initial process, that is considered to be one of bishul. The Rambam writes, the conclusion stage, that is considered to be the act of bishul itself. Eglital even points out a step further. Is this an av? Or is this considered to be a toda? Eglital writes the following. According to the Rambam, the hardening is a permanent condition. It's a permanent change of state. That's the Av Melacha. That's what they did in the Mishkan. They used to harden something, and that was its permanent state. According to Rashi, as we mentioned, this is just an intermediate stage. Where do you find in the Mishkan that they used to apply heat for that temporary state? And therefore, Eglital suggests an interesting idea that according to Rashi, perhaps this is only a tolda. According to the Rambam, it's an av. The Rambam was willing to assume that hardening is part of the malacha, hardening which is a permanent condition, that's the av malacha. According to Rashi, where it is the softening, so in such a case, the softening is quite transient, quite temporary, and therefore, it is only considered to be a case of a tolda. An interesting possibility. In fact, maybe one could argue a step further. The Rambam writes, when you take this peg and you put it in the oven, soft, hard, you're chayev from avasha. Why are you only chayev once? Could one possibly suggest, according to him, maybe you should be chayev twice? After all, the Rambam didn't say, I disagree with your position, Rashi, and the definition of bishul is the application of heat to harden. No. Rambam also agrees that if you apply heat to soften, that also is considered to be act of mavasha. And once the Gemara says, when you take this peg and you put it in the oven, the stages are, it first becomes soft and then becomes hard, maybe one could argue that that's a dual act of bishul, according to the Rambam. But yet the Rambam writes, you only chayev once. So I'll ask you, why only chayev once? One act, right? So that could be one possibility, right? That maybe it was all done ayyadei maisa echad. It's all done in one act, and in such a case, then you're only going to be chayev once. You can't be chayev twice, even though it has a dual effect. That's a possibility. That's based on the Eglital. See, if that's true, that with a single act, with a single consequence, you can be chayev once, not twice, that could help resolve another difficulty. The Gemara writes in Shabbos that in Gimel Bay is the following, that zomer, if a person prunes, and the tzorech leitzim, and he plans to use those twigs, the branches that he cuts off to fuel the fire, he's chayev twice. He's chayev for zomer, which is promoting the growth of the plant, zoreya, and he's also chayev for kotzer, because he harvested. So zomer, the tzorech leitzim, chayev shtayim. So Tosus is bothered by the following question. Tzorech leitzim, that's my mindset. Why? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? The answer is, I plan to fuel the fire. The why question, we spend time on that. Now, the why question usually is, Malacha Shino Tzrich L'Gufa. Why are you doing it? Not what are you doing. Why are you doing that? In other words, that should be Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So if I hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that the why question really is not very relevant, because Malacha Shino Tzrich L'Gufa is Chayiv, so maybe I should argue, Zomer is always chayev twice. Well, number one, when you prune, you're promoting the growth of the plant. And number two, you're promoting the growth of the plant not by planting, but rather by cutting off branches. Isn't that an act of kotzer? What difference does it make whether I plan to use the wood or whether I do not? So the Tosus Rid writes, and that's Sugi and Shabbos that I in Gilmer Beis as follows, that you're right. The only reason you need Tzorech Leitzim is to accommodate the view of Rabbi Shimon, that a malacha shino tzrich lagufa is Potter, Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion the why question is always critical. So therefore, you always have to ask yourself, why are you doing it? Why are you only cutting those branches? Why aren't you just hacking away at the tree? The answer is, this is my tree in my backyard. Right? I want to promote the growth of the plant. That's a case of Zoreya. And what do you plan to do with the branches? I plan to use it to fuel the fire. Now it is an issue of kotzer. But the Tosfos writes, if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that melacha shenetzrich leguf is chayim, in such a case, zomer is always chayim twice. But this is against the view of the Rambam. Because the Rambam in Perek Aleph Hilchos Shabbos assumes like Rabbi Yehuda, that a melacha shenetzrich leguf is chayim. And the Rambam Perek Ches, if Hilchos Shabbos, quotes the Gemara as we have it, zomer b'tzorach leitzim is chayim shtayim. The Rambam writes Tzorach Leitzim is necessary even according to Rabbi Yehuda. So we discussed several possibilities. Tosfos stated the following Kiddush, that there are certain malachos that the why question is critical. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda. You know why? Because the definition of kotzer is harvesting. Harvesting. And Tosfos says, Lo nikre ktsira be'etzim ela b'nyinzeh. If you don't plan to use that which you are removing, what you're cutting, that is not called harvesting. In other words, that's part of the definition of the malacha itself. And therefore, why you're doing so is very critical. The Glital writes the following interesting answer, and that is this, that here, we want you to be chayiv twice. We want you to be chayiv twice. Zomer, you're pruning. There's a twofold consequence. You're promoting the growth of the plant, as well as utilizing that which you cut. In order to be chayiv twice for a single act, you have to be able to demonstrate that there is an independent tozah, that there are a dual purpose. There are two independent conditions, consequences of that which you're doing. Otherwise, you cannot be chayiv twice. In a word, the only time that you can be chayiv twice for a single act is if you can demonstrate that there is a twofold consequence to that which you are doing. That's why the Rambam says you need zomer v'tzorach leitzim. If result A is you're promoting the growth of the plant, and result B is that you're utilizing that which you cut off of the tree, then and only then can you be chayiv twice. And that's why the Rambam writes that the mindset, the intent, is critical. Because otherwise you cannot be chayiv twice for a single act unless you can demonstrate that there is a conscious, dual purpose that act itself. Maybe one could argue that's true in this case as well. That according to the Rambam, we ask that maybe one should be chayiv twice because by placing the peg in the oven, you are softening and ultimately hardening, but then there isn't a twofold tozah, there isn't a twofold purpose to your activity. The purpose of the activity is simply to harden the peg. It's true, it's a process. Then one is only chayiv once. Or maybe one could suggest maybe a simpler possibility. You know why you're only chayiv once for the hardening and not softening? Maybe the Rambam disagrees with Rashi. Rashi, who says that you're chayiv for softening, what was the chiddush we pointed out according to Rashi, chiddush number two? That softening is a highly temporary state. No? We put out three chiddushim according to Rashi. No? Chiddush number two. How long does it remain soft? No, the hardening process takes hours, and for a short window of time, it is softened. Maybe the Rambam would argue that soft window of time is of no consequence. If it wouldn't become soft, then you wouldn't be chayiv for the permanent condition of hardening. But to be chayiv independently for the softening process, you pointed out, don't you need a malacha shal kayama? An enduring state, an enduring condition. And maybe that's why the Rambam writes that you're not going to be chayiv for that short window of time that the object is considered to be softened. Maybe one could even argue as follows. Maybe the Rambam would agree with Rashi. You're chayiv for softening and you're chayiv for hardening. But isn't there a difference? Hardening is a permanent condition, as was done in the Mishkan. Softening temporarily was not really found in the Mishkan at all. And if it wasn't found in the Mishkan, then it's a tolda. So softening, hardening is a classic example then of doing an av and its tolda. And what does the Rambam write about doing an av and its tolda? If you do an av and its tolda, you're only chayiv once. Maybe that's why, according to the Rambam, you only chayiv once in that particular case. According to Rashi, the hardening is not a melacha, so you're only chayiv for the softening process. But once the Rambam tells us that you're chayiv for hardening as well, so what have you in effect done in av and its tolda? We use some like the chachamim. If a person does an av and its tolda, you're only chayiv once, you're not chayiv twice at all. In such a case, maybe that's why the Rambam writes that that in fact is true. You know, there's a fascinating Gemara that has a similar case, and the Gemara seems to say the exact opposite. This is a Gemara, not Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Ches. And here the Gemara discusses something very different, not the Melacha Daraisa of Shabbos, but the Isser Derabanan of Bishul Nachri. An Isser Derabanan of Bishul Nachri. If a Nachri, right, applies heat in order to cook, in such a case, right, that food type, generally speaking, will be forbidden, right, to a Yisrael, of course, with certain conditions. The Gemara describes a fascinating case that, you know, I cook my vegetables. The Gemara is dealing with a case where I have a gourd, and I put it, right, in the oven. I put it in the oven. And all of a sudden, a guy comes with his peg, and he wants to harden his peg. So he throws the peg in the oven, and he turns the oven on for the purpose of hardening his peg, and you know, and lo and behold, my food, right, is cooked. The Gemara says that that is mutter. That is not a problem of Bishul Nachri. Why is that not a problem of Bishul Nachri? Because here the Gemara now says the exact opposite. The Gemara said in Shabbos, when it comes to Malacha on Shabbos, that what did you think? Mahu desema lishri manakamecha vein, that his intent is only to harden a peg, kamash malan, mir parafi, v'hadar kamit. No, you're cooking, you're softening and hardening. Here the Gemara writes the exact opposite. Of course it's not a problem, Bishul Nachri, no. Maybe you would argue that hardening the peg is a form of cooking. Mir parafi, v'hadar kamit, kamash malan, no. L'shirim anakamachavim. His intent simply is to harden, and therefore that is not considered to be a problem of Bishul Nachri at all. Right? It's a fascinating issue. Right? The Gemara says when it comes to Bishul Nachri, the opposite issue. That's not called an act of Bishul, and therefore you are not Chayiv at all. On Shabbos, that is Bishul min HaTorah. For Bishul Nachri, that is not considered to be Bishul, and therefore, even if secondarily, that he ended up cooking food, right, that is not considered to be a problem of Bishul Nachri at all. How do you resolve that apparent contradiction? One possibility may be the following. Let's assume Rashi's point. Where was the Bishul? The softening process. The softening process. But the softening process was a temporary condition. If that's true, the softening is only a temporary condition, that wasn't found in the Mishkan. That is only a tolda. A tolda. We discussed in one of the earlier shiurim the following very interesting issue. On Shabbos, they're told us. We don't take the Lamatis Malachos so literally to say that's it. Those are 39 categories. But there are told us as well. No? And how do you know that they're told us on Shabbos? That's a pasuk. That's a sugin Shabbos. That ayin mei heina means the Torah forbids heina. And now the Torah tells us to derive mei heina hayotzin min ha'avos. They're derivatives. Are there told us when it comes to other areas, lahalacha? So we mentioned that Tosus and Bechoros, Vanadav Chafei and Aleph, where Tosus says that no, just because they're told us on Shabbos, you can't assume they're told us in other areas. In other words, one of the malachos of Shabbos is gozei, shearing. I know that tolesh, plucking, is chayev nishum gozeis. Do I have a right to assume that's true with every other place the Torah uses the term gozeis? For example, if you have an animal that is a firstborn, a bechor, the Torah says you're not allowed to shear that animal. Do I have a right to assume, you know what, whatever the definition of shearing is in Hilchos Shabbos, that is also relevant to bechor? So that's what the Tosfos writes in Bechoros Nef Chafei. You have no right to make that assumption, because on Shabbos they're toldos, but you can't necessarily assume that there are toldos when it comes to other areas, lahalacha. See, it's interesting. The sugin bava kama, the opening daf, beizam and aleph. The Mishnah says, arba avos mizikin. And the Gemara just simply begins by saying, midik tani avos, michlal dika toldos. If they're avos, There must be toldos. I would have expected one more word. Minolan. How do you know this? How do you know this? The Gemara doesn't ask. How do you know this? The Gemara just says, it's a clear observation. In other words, it's interesting. When it comes to Nezikin, somehow the Gemara doesn't require a pasuk. When it comes to Shabbos, a pasuk is in fact necessary. No, there certainly is a marked difference. You know, when it comes to mitzvos and isurim, there's a limit to koach hasvara. Now, I can't always use this logic and intuition when it comes to a mitzvah. When it comes to dinim, very often the Gemara will use svara. No? The Gemara will say that, how do you know the burden of proof, right, is on the one who puts forth the claim? Hamotzi mechaver, olav haraya. The Gemara answers, svaro, isn't it obvious? Now, I say that your shirt is mine, but you have to prove that it's yours. I have to prove my claim. How do you know that you have to make a bracha rishona? The Gemara says, it's a svara. No? Kishesoveh mavare, kiseroi bo kolshkein. No? Don't you have to thank Hashem for your food? So it's interesting that hamotzimei chavala paraya, which is svara, we assume that's a din daraisa. And making a bracha before you eat, which is a svara, the Gemara assumes is only a din derabanan. When is svara a din daraisa? When is svara a din derabanan? And the answer perhaps is exactly this point. There's a limit to the koach hasvara when it comes to a mitzvah. We try to understand why Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this mitzvah as best as we can. But you know, the koach hasvara will not generate, not create a mitzvah. It may be very reasonable to us why we don tefillin, but the svara alone is not going to create an obligation of wearing tefillin each and every day. But when it comes to choshen mishpat, that is not necessarily true at all. There, a koach hasvara is considered to be something which is quite compelling. The Gemara assumes that svara is daraisa when it comes to cases of dinim. And therefore, a bracha can be derabanan, but hamotzim el chavara is considered to be daraisa. This could be relevant for Rashi as well. When it comes to nezikin, the svara is good min ha-Torah. And therefore, logically, if the Torah gives me examples of hezek, shor bor mav and hezer, I don't walk away from the Chumash and say, and only in those cases am I chayim, but I have a right to glean. And therefore, I can assume intuitively that there are not only avos, Rashi writes avos is that which is found explicit in the Torah, they're also toldos. But if you want to know the limitations of Melechus Shabbos, there you don't use simply svara. If you're going to tell me there's a tolda, something that was not found in the Mishkan is forbidden min ha-Torah, for that you have to have a pasuk. And therefore, when it comes to other mitzvos or other isurim, if there is no pasuk, we don't necessarily know that there are toldos. Maybe one could argue as follows, that according to Rashi's view, if the bishul process is the softening of that thing, and that is only considered to be a tolda, toldos exist when it comes to Shabbos. Is there a tolda when it comes to bishul nachri? A tolda when it comes to bishul nachri? Not necessarily. And maybe that's why the Gemara writes that the same process, which according to Rashi is a tolda of bishul when it comes to Shabbos, is not considered to be included in bishul nachri at all, even though both forbid the act of bishul, but nonetheless they could be defined differently. Bishul nachri is the more permanent condition. In Shabbos, as he told the Rashi writes, Yechayiv, in a temporary sense as well. This is some of the background when it comes to the definition of bishul. Where Rashi writes, classically, application of heat, and for the purpose of softening, the Rambam writes that no, any change of state that results from the use of heat, softening or hardening, is considered to be the act of bishul. And the fascinating possibilities in terms of reading the simple line of the Gemara. When a person takes a peg in the oven, mir parafi, v'hadar kameit, according to Rashi, mir parafi, that is the issur, according to the Rambam, hadar kameit, and the various possibilities. Why, according to the Rambam, you're only chayiv once, and you wouldn't be chayiv for two manifestations of the act of vishal itself. Okay. Yeah.